You are flying high on Locked On Eagles, your source for the best Philadelphia Eagles news and analysis, brought to you by LockedOnEagles.com. I am your host, Michael Kist, from Inside the Pylon, Breaking Football and Grandstand Sports Network. Follow me on Twitter at Michael J. Kist. That's K-I-S-T. As always, I am joined by the best co-host in the game, Mr. 7-Year Streak Without a Bad Day. He is Benjamin Solak of Bleeding Green Nation and NDT Scouting. Follow him on Twitter at Benjamin Solak. That's S-O-L-A-K. Ben, how you doing, brother?
Oh, every day is a good day to be alive. Mike, I'm enjoying this bye week. Ready to get chatting with our guest, man.
That's right. We have a special guest from PhillyVoice.com. He is the Vincent Van Gogh of MS Paint. He is sugar and spice, and he's going to both of you twice. On with us today is Jimmy Kemsky. Jimmy, how you doing, brother?
That was a Don King-like introduction there.
I have a little special greeting to all of our guests, man. It's, how have you been? It's been a couple months since we talked. A lot has happened since then.
Yeah, when did we talk? Well, like, what part of the season was that? Was that before the
preseason?
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah, because I gave my you asked me for an over under, I think, on Derek Barnett and the number of sacks he would have.
Right.
Does that sound right?
Yeah, we also asked you, Jimmy, for your predicted NFC East winner, and you told us the Giants.
I did. Thanks for throwing that back in my face.
Yeah, no problem, Chief. I got you.
That's awesome. Jimmy, let all the gentle listeners know where they can find all your work and yourself.
Yeah, like you mentioned, PhillyVoice.com or just on Twitter, Jimmy Kemsky. Gotcha. Pretty straightforward.
Very nice. All right, so let's get into it, man. I saw you wrote about this as well, but nationally loathed buffoon and journalistic equivalent of mustard gas, Skip Bayless, erroneously credited Carson Wentz with fumbling against the Broncos, saying he watched the whole game, yet he seemed genuinely surprised when he was told that Von Miller got a strip sack. So in typical Skip fashion, having not seen it himself, he attributed the fumble to Wentz when it was Nick Foles at the time. Here's the thing, Jimmy. Regardless of what the mentally handicapped had to say about it, the Eagles schemed up Von Miller, and he was ineffective in key moments. And I wrote about this before the game on LockedOnEagles.com regarding the ways in which we could neutralize or present Von with trash, and we spoke about the utilization of hard counts and choosing not to block him at times on this show on Monday. Jimmy, you wrote about it for PhillyVoice.com after the game, saying that we essentially used Von against himself. Von got some wins, but what did you see after rewatching the game that made the Eagles so prosperous in relatively neutering arguably the best pass rusher in the league?
Yeah, I mean, it did a lot of different things. And did you say you guys said that the Monday before the game about just leaving him unblocked, or the day after?
Oh, no, that was the day after, because I noticed, you know, we got four offsides from the hard counts and whatnot, yeah.
I was going to say, that was, you know, pretty Nostradamus-like, if so. It was very well done. But still, you know, good to notice it, you know, immediately after the game as well, so I'll give you props there. But, yeah, they on their first two touchdowns, they left them unblocked. I mean, on the first one, they ran that read option where Wentz put the ball in the belly of the back. I want to say it was Clement, or there, it might have been a guy. I don't know.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter. Okay, so he kept it, and that just froze Miller just enough. Mm. And Aqib Talib, of course, bit on that action as well, and Jeffrey got behind him and went through just a perfect pillow soft touch pass to him, and it was all over. The second touchdown, you know, pretty straightforward. It was a screen pass, a little bit of a wrinkle on the screen, and that it was they ran play action. That was to Clement. And so they faked the handoff to Clement. Wentz actually stared down. This is a very subtle thing that Wentz did on this. He stared down Burton, who was the fullback on that play. Burton leaked out into the flat. Mm-hmm. Wentz was just staring at him in the flat. He got the linebackers to move over that way. And Clement opened up in the middle of the field. But what Clement did, you know, crucial part of that play was, you know, he faked as though he was going to be in pass protection. Mm. Von Miller must have been licking his chops, seeing undrafted rookie running back trying to block him one-on-one in pass protection, and then yoink!
Yeah.
Clement steps out of his way, catches the screen, and the linebackers are now gone because they chased after Burton, and he's got just a straight line to the end zone. It was a great play call, great eye deception by Wentz, and it's a good job by Clement, frankly, with the way that he kind of okey-doked Miller. But that was two plays where they didn't block him, and you know, they got two scores on that. And what that did was later in the game, you know, it kind of messed with Miller's head, because there were situations where he wasn't blocked, and he kind of be like, all right, what's up now? Like, then he was kind of afraid to attack the quarterback, because he had gotten beaten on plays in which he wasn't blocked. There was one play where another read option look where he wasn't blocked, and then all of a sudden, bang, Mac Hollins appears up out of nowhere, and he's blocking Von Miller. And that wound up being an incomplete pass, but you know, still a very creative scheme that they had to kind of neutralize Miller. They chipped him a little bit. And when Lane Johnson did block him one-on-one, he handled him. He, by my count, he actually only had 8 one-on-one opportunities with Miller.
Right.
And Miller did get pressure on one. He almost got to Wentz. Wentz had to flush got flushed out of the pocket. But in the aftermath of Wentz getting flushed out of the pocket, Lane just drilled him into the turf.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, he just absolutely pancaked him. So, you know, while Miller did get pressure on that play, you know, he kind of made him pay for it. Pro Football Focus had Miller as the highest rated player in that game, which I get it. He had the strip sack at the end of the game, caused the fumble. They return it for a touchdown. But come on, give some context with your grades. Like, can you watch the game and get like it's against the third string right tackle, the backup quarterback. Give me a break. Like, you can't have that guy. I mean, I'm not going to tell them how to grade their you know, how they grade players or whatever. But give me a break with the best player in that game. He got totally neutralized in that game. And you give a lot of credit to Lane Johnson for neutralizing the way he did. But the game plan by Doug Peterson and Frank Reich and the Eagles' brain trust offensively, they did a hell of a job neutralizing a player who I feel is the best defender in the NFL.
Right. Yeah, I definitely agree. And there are times where, I don't know if you saw the one where Lane Johnson just smacked him when Vaughn looked like he was about to set up for a spin and he put him through the spin cycle. That was absolutely beautiful. And like you said, going against Siamalu and running around him is one thing, or whoever it was out there going against Lane Johnson and doing that should be a completely different grade. All right, Ben, what do you got for Jimmy?
Right, so that offensive line play has been something else, and it's really impressive. So I guess my question to you is, you got an Eagles team sitting at a surprising 8-1, right? Nobody really expected them to be the best team in the league. So as far as what surprised you the most so far for Philadelphia, has it been that offensive line play in the running game? Has it been the play of the cornerbacks with all the injuries that have been had there? Has it just been the success of Doug Peterson, who, you know, it was a guy who was brought in and he was kind of a second choice, you know, wasn't really the apple of other teams' eye. It was just the Eagles that were interested in him. What's been the biggest surprise for you as far as getting the Eagles to 8-1?
Well, all those things were surprises. I was a little higher on Doug than most. But the thing that I would say is that you didn't mention, I agree with everything you said, but the one thing that I would mention is just how many positive contributions they've gotten from players who have become either afterthoughts or guys who, you know, the fan base had just kind of given up on, and they've just completely resurrected their careers this year. Patrick Robinson had a horrific, you know, first week or two of training camp. I've never seen a cornerback get beaten as badly, as consistently as he did the first couple weeks of training camp as he did. We thought he was going to get cut, much less, you know, wind up having like a really significant role on this team.
Yeah.
Then you have Vinny Curry, who, you know, hasn't put up, you know, big time stats or anything this season, but has been outstanding against the run. And then you have guys like Nelson Aguilar, is an obvious guy who has, you know, had really just two garbage first 2 years of his career after being a first-round pick. And then he comes out and he's become one of the better slot receivers in the NFL.
Yeah.
And then even other guys like, who am I missing here? I mean, take your pick. I mean, they're just all over the place. Jalen Mills has really stepped up his game. You know, I think people kind of thought that he would improve heading into this year, but he's improved enormously in my view and looks like he was always a confident player, but I think he has reason to be a very confident player now. And then even some of the rookie contributions, like Rasul Douglas has played better than I thought he would initially. Matt Collins has chipped in some key things. You know, Derek Barnett, while again, he doesn't have big time sack numbers or anything like that, he's played well both in the run game and getting pressure on the quarterback. So they've just gotten contributions from guys left and right that a lot of people maybe didn't think they would heading into this season.
Yeah,
that's an excellent point, Jimmy. And actually, I want to ask you a question about some of those guys, which is more of like an off-season-y sort of a question. I was going to hold it till later, but might as well ask it now. Michael Kendricks, Vinny Curry are the two big guys for me who've kind of stepped out of, you know, some spiraling careers and really produced this year. And these were two guys who it was both kind of mentioned, you know, in off seasons past and kind of looking forward, that they'd be on the chopping block, that once their contracts made it advantageous for them to leave, the Eagles would move on from these players. You know, we know they've been trying to trade Michael Kendricks now for a while. So, you know, looking forward at next year, you know, Vinny Curry is going to take up $11 million off the cap. You can save $5 million if you cut him. Michael Kendricks is going to take up $7.6 million off the cap, and you can save $4.4 million if you save him. With the way these guys have played so far in the building, do you think that they will be retained through the rest of these contracts? Do you think they might restructure, or do you think Philly's still looking to move on from these pieces?
Yeah, well, first of all, it's funny that you mentioned Michael Kendricks, because he's another really obvious one that people didn't think were going to do much this year. Yeah. And I missed him. So, like, I mean, there's so many players that have stepped up this year that, like, you can rattle off, like, 5 or 6 names and forget an obvious. He's played very well. I mean, he's been real. They haven't missed Jordan Hicks at all. They just haven't. It's amazing that Jordan Hicks is gone for the season, and it's kind of like an afterthought at this point. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, certainly Jason Peters was a big loss, and, you know, you want Jordan Hicks in there, but Kendricks has really stepped up and played well, and as has another guy who's kind of stepped up his game this year as well, Nigel Bradham. But, yeah, you know, getting to your question, so Michael Kendricks, you know, I can't believe that he was still on the roster when the season began, because I thought it was a sure thing that he was going to be traded just with the information that I had from back in, I think it was like February or so. And they did try to trade him, and they almost did. They almost traded him to the 49ers. And even Kyle Shanahan acknowledged that when he had a conference call with him prior to the 49ers game this year. So, I mean, that's a guy that the Eagles were done. They're basically done with him. And he just, for years, has just kind of stuck around. he just stays on the roster. And you're right. He's had a great season. And you don't know what Jordan Hicks' future is going to be, because he's got to come back from that injury, and he just really hasn't proven that he can stay healthy throughout college and the pros and whatever else. So you kind of have to keep him, I think. I mean, he's got a big number. He's like you mentioned, salary-wise, but I'd imagine they'll keep him. And then Vinny Curry, heading into the season, I think most people kind of, myself included, kind of thought, well, this is going to be his last year here, because he does carry a huge number in 2018, and he'll save a nice chunk of that if they were to cut or cut being the more realistic option. But maybe you just keep him now, and maybe you get him to take a pay cut. I don't know if he'll be willing to do that now that he's had a better season, but I mean, these are two guys, like you mentioned, that have really stepped up this season, and you'd hope you can retain them on the roster. Obviously, their numbers are big, their salary numbers are big, but if it's working, you kind of don't want to mess up the chemistry and the way that the team has played. So I would imagine they may keep those guys when, like you said, heading into, you know, during this offseason, I think most people kind of thought that there was somewhere in the 80 to 90% chance, you know, range of them both being gone.
All right, so let's talk about then. So we talked about some of the guys that we may be moving on from or keeping in the offseason. What about this season? Because you look at this cornerback group. Shout out to a friend of the show and my boy Damo. He sent me an article the other day that asked the question, what does our cornerback situation look like moving forward when it comes to not only Ronald Darby's return, but the eventual debut of rookie Sidney Jones? So I'll frame it to you this way, Jimmy. Come playoff time, what is your best educated guess as far as who is starting outside, who is starting inside, probably Patrick Robinson, who dresses, who gets scratched out of this cornerback group? What does it look like in general?
I think the starters are Darby and Mills, with Robinson in the slot, and Rasul Douglas is just there if they need him. And I wonder if they'll play matchups. So, for example, you know, Rasul Douglas played well against Brandon Marshall week 3 against the Giants, and everyone's played well against Brandon Marshall this year, so I don't know if that's the best example. But Rasul Douglas is a bigger corner if you want to get him matched up against a bigger type receiver. I was going to say the Panthers and Kelvin Benjamin, but they traded him. So, if they do face a team in the playoffs that does have a bigger receiver, you know, maybe it makes sense to give him some playing time. But I think for the most part, it'll be Darby and Mills starting with Robinson at the slot. I have no idea on Sidney Jones. I just don't. I have no idea what's going on with him and what their plans are for him this season. If he doesn't play a certain number of games, I think it's 5, he basically doesn't get a year credit.
Right.
He doesn't get an accrued season. Minus that accrued season, if at the end of his contract he only has 3 accrued seasons, he's not an unrestricted free agent. He becomes a restricted free agent, right, and then you can retain those guys. It'll still be more costly than what he's making now, but you'll be able to retain him at a reasonable number as opposed to him hitting the the open market. So, you know, he won't like that. And his agent won't like that. But, you know, that may be something that they do if they really feel confident in the corners that they have. And I'll say one thing. With Darby getting hurt, when he got hurt week one, you know, everyone was kind of like, uh-oh, that's big time problem. But it's actually worked out for them because they've gotten Rasul Douglas in there and he's gotten his feet wet. And I think he's already proven that he could be a quality NFL starter. He needs to be your number one guy, but I'm sorry.
I said, my man, I'm a big Douglas fan on here. So you helped me out.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So yeah, I mean, they've gotten him some playing time. I think he's proven that he can be a legit starter in the NFL. And they wouldn't have gotten him that experience had Darby stayed healthy. And they're 8-1. So they haven't missed Darby since he's been out. And I think when he comes back, he's going to give, you know, the defense a little bit of a shot in the arm. And they'll have a lot of – suddenly they have depth at corner. When before the season, you're like, they have nothing at corner.
Right.
Now they have depth at corner with a guy who many people thought wouldn't even be at 14 before he ruptured his Achilles in Sidney Jones. So – if he can come back and be a good player, I mean, they are set up in 2018 and beyond. Sidney Jones is 21 years old.
Right.
Jalen Mills, I think, is 23, 24. Rasul Douglas is 22 or 23. And then, Darby's 23, I think. So they have four corners who are all very, very young, who are all only going to get better, and who are, you know, some of whom have shown that they can play this season. So, you go from – and you look at, like, what they did two seasons ago. I mean, they just needed a quarterback, and they fixed that problem. Mm. The next offseason, they just needed corners.
Yeah.
They get the corners. They fixed that position. So two straight years, they fixed what was their – in my view, their biggest need in back-to-back seasons and with authority. So I think, you know, what Howie Roseman has done in the front office has been – I think he's done a great job.
And then we also needed a running back. And Jimmy, I would be remiss if I didn't ask about your thoughts on the jersey analytics and overall weight of the number 36 that Jay Ajayi has begun wearing.
You mean in terms of him taking Westbrook's number?
Yeah. Plus, you know, that six is heavy. Last time we talked, Ronald Darby didn't want that 36.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. He didn't want that number. I think it was 33, actually, that he thought was a heavy number, or maybe it was 36. But I know that a lot of people have been complaining on Twitter and elsewhere that they gave out Brian Westbrook's number. But, I mean, what? Come on. Brian Westbrook was a great player. You're not going to give his number out? I mean, all this number hoarding is actually ridiculous, frankly. Like, they're holding Randall Cunningham's jersey. They won't give out 12. Randall Cunningham was an exciting player. Give me a break. Like, give his number out. It's ridiculous that they're holding 12. Brian Dawkins? Absolutely. Don't give anyone 20.
Like, right.
No question. Don't give anyone 20. But McNabb, they're not going to give out 5 for the foreseeable future. And that's fine. Like, they're going to retire his number, I'm sure. So that's fine. But, like, Randall Cunningham and Brian Westbrook, give those out. Like, get out of here.
Yeah.
Like, if you don't give out these numbers, you won't have any numbers left.
Yeah. Either retire them or don't and let people wear them. I agree with that. Ben, do you have anything else for our friend Jimmy here?
Yeah, I've got one more quick question, just picking your brain here because we're talking about injury returns. The Eagles' IR and the potential returns there are actually, like, relatively sparse. You've got Jordan Hicks, Darren Sproles, and Jason Peters all on IR, obviously, but none of them will be able to return later in the season because they all tore ACLs or ruptured Achilles. They ain't coming back anytime soon. Beyond that, you've got Donnell Pumphrey, the fourth-round rookie running back. You've got Caleb Sturgis, who was the incumbent kicker before Jake Elliott and then all that mania happened. You've got Chris Maragos, who's a depth safety. He's a special teams player. And then you've got Dom Williams, practice squad wide receiver. Aziz Shiftu is one of your depth defensive tackles. Randall Goforth, one of your depth cornerbacks. The Eagles have the ability to call somebody back from IR. Do you see them doing it with any of these names?
Nope.
Me neither.
That's the short answer. I mean, if Maragos can't come back, Peters can't come back, Hicks can't come back, Sproles isn't coming back, they're all done for the season, so you're not bringing anyone back, obviously. The only one who might make sense to bring back, and it would only be if Jake Elliott got hurt, would be Caleb Sturgis. That's it. That'd be the only scenario where they bring back a guy from IR. If they get an injury, and because they're not going to bring Sturgis back and put him on the 53-man roster when they already have a kicker, clearly. Mm. And they're not going to bring him back in favor of Jake Elliott because Jake Elliott is clearly, you know, deserved to stay on this team and be their kicker going forward and through the playoffs. So nobody, I mean, they're not going to bring anybody back. And if they put somebody on IR by now, they have to be on IR for 8 weeks anyway. So they're not going to exercise that IR with designation to return at all this season.
Jimmy, It has been an absolute pleasure. Guys, tune in tomorrow. We are going to have the 1980 championship game between the Cowboys and the Eagles in narrative style with music and all types of game clips and all that stuff. Jimmy, one more time, I want to thank you for coming on and joining us and talking Eagles with us, brother.
No, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Remember, keep it locked on here on Locked On Eagles. Fly, Eagles, fly.